नमस्ते नाथ भगवन् शिवाय गुरुरूपिणे विद्यावतार संसिद्धे स्वीकृतानिक विग्रहनमाय नमः रूपाय परमार्थैकरूपिणे सर्वज्ञानतमोभेद भानवेचुद्गणाय ते स्वतन्त्राय दयाक्लुप्ताय विग्रहाय शिवात्मने परतन्त्राय भक्तानां भव्यानां भव्यरूपिणे विवेकिनां विवेकाय विमर्शाय विमर्शिनां प्रकाशिनां प्रकाशाय ज्ञानिनां ज्ञानरूपिणे पुरस्तात्पार्श्वयोः पृष्ठे नमस्कुर्यारोपरितः सदा मच्चित्तरूपेण विदेहि भवता स्मित्येहं पञ्चमश्लोके स्तुवीत यजमानसः प्रातः प्रभो समये जपाच्छ दिवसं भवेत् शिवादिगुरुभ्यो नमः. ओके, वी हैव बीन लुकिंग इन टू दि गुणा मैनिफेस्टेशंस ऑफ दि विमर्शशक्ति. वी स्टार्टेड फ्रॉम आदिमहालक्ष्मी एंड देन सॉ हाउ शी स्प्लिट इन टू तमो महामाया एंड सत्व महाविद्या. We also saw how Mahamaya manifested into Mahakali and Mahavidya manifested into Mahasaraswati and the Triguna Adi Mahalakshmi manifested into Trigunatmika Mahalakshmi. We saw last week how the Gunas were mixed to form the Mithunas. From Mahakali came Rudra and Bharati. From Mahalakshmi came Brahma and Lakshmi. From Mahasaraswati came Vishnu and Gauri. They married among themselves Rudra to Gauri, Brahma to Bharati, and Vishnu to Lakshmi. We saw all the guna mixture concepts and in fact understood why guna is the prime reason why we exist and the way we do today. So without guna, we would not have had the scope of moksha at all. We would have remained as puppets. So it appeared that most of you liked the last session.
Namaskar, Guru.
Namaskaram, go to mute. So it appears that most of you liked the last session, and I got a lot of questions from you about the last session. Most of your questions can be categorized into two general questions. Number one is, it is truly an eye-opener to know that guna is responsible for us to have the possibility to attain the moksha. I'm interested in knowing what I can do to customize my gunas so that I can increase this potential knowingly with awareness. The second question would be, I would like to know where I stand in this path, how to measure my evolution, progress in this path, etc. So I thought it is very, those questions are important, and it is important for me to address those questions before I move further. So instead of picking up the next natural sequence within the guna dimension manifestation as revealed by the Chandi Rahasyam, I'm going to digress a bit and address your doubts for the next two sessions, and then we'll get back to the topic. Okay. So first, let me address the doubt on how to measure the progress and the question whether any progress has been made so far. Okay, that's a key question. I'm sure several of you might have similar thoughts. First of all, remember our path is a moksha path, moksha margam. Almost all of my teachings have been in tattva levels, and I have hardly talked about any kamyartha or prayogas. You all know from day one, we really don't have any sankalpams. Even in large pujas and events, we don't have any sankalpams truly. We will just say that I'm doing it, that's it. Not for why, what reason, none of those things. We don't ask for anything to God, to the Devata. No, Godumaschame, Masurachame, Tilaschame, none of those things. We are really not interested in those things. In such a moksha path, it can be challenging in measuring progress. In Jnanamarga, imagine all you do is contemplation. It is even more difficult. At least we have kriyas, we have emotions, bhakti, yoga, stuff involved. But if you are asked to why contemplate of, if you are asked to only contemplate of who you are, where you came from, what is the Nitya Vastu, what is the Brahma Vastu, what is the reflection, what is Chidabhasan, what is Kutasthan, what is the Ishwaran, etc., etc., and constantly keep on questioning, imagine how difficult it would have been to measure progress. Because at that state, you either realize or you don't. It is a switch. In our path, we don't ask anything from our Upasana Devata. However, we do chant the mantras. All are highly potent mantras. Those mantras have powers, and it is only through those mantra viryas your kanchukas are erased. The janmantra vasanas are wiped out, and the Atma Jyoti, that prakasham, starts to appear, even though blurred. That's okay. But you're able to realize something is there. Okay. So now, rewind back. 3, 4, 5 years, Would you have understood a Tirumular or a Saiva Siddhanta book or any of the Advaita books? Just think about it. Would you have even been interested in listening to a Lalita Sahasranama Bhashyam talking about Tattvams? Consider where you are now. You've reached a stage to even contemplate of the very seed of this universe. You've come across numerous dimensions of the manifestation of the energy, be it in Varivasya Rahasyam or the Tattvamar for Lalitopakyanam, or what we are uncovering right now in Devi Mahatmya Rahasyas. Just do a simple Google search on the details that you have got through these granthas. You'll realize that none of the information that you have been revealed to will be in any books, any articles, or any Upanyasams. No one would have addressed those ideas. I'm not saying just because I'm some great person to have somehow received these jnanas, not at all. There are great gurus and stalwarts around, and they are Sakshat Dakshinamurtis themselves. However, none of them would have addressed these in the form that God revealed to you. Most of these would have been passed down one-on-one between gurus and sishyas and not in this form. This pandemic has truly been a blessing from this perspective. Without these lectures, all these gems would have been either remained a secret for most of you or would have been in tidbits whenever we met. These tattvas would appear to be easy to grasp while you're listening, but the moment you get back to your day-to-day activities, they would simply vanish. Several of you have told me that you constantly keep these lectures running while you walk, while you cook, while you exercise, before you sleep, etc., etc. And you have been listening to those repeatedly, and each time you listen, different meanings get sprouted. Just the mere understanding of these tattvas and rahasyas themselves is a measurement of progress. The opportunity to hear them itself is a siddhi. You should realize that some gurus from the Guru Mandalam have been showering their compassion on us in revealing these. Ramanujacharya had to beg numerous gurus to get the Ashtakshari Upadesam, as it was not kept as Ashtakshari within one guru. Each Akshara was secretly maintained by different gurus, and he had to reach out to each one of them and be a humble Sishya and prove his worth to get those individual Aksharas and then compile them to form the Ashtakshari. And then he revealed to everyone. Now imagine if he didn't. The future Sishyas would have to struggle the same way to get it, or they might not have got it too, right? Some may get two Aksharas, some probably may just get one and pass away. But almost everyone now knows the Ashtakshari's. But do we have the same kind of greatness that feel that Ramanuja would have felt when he coined them? It has become a common household name itself now. So anything that comes out without the struggle and the earning for it might lose its value. Similarly, just because you have been getting these secrets that have been guarded by great gurus for a reason, all these yugas, don't forget the value of these. If these were not shared, most of you would not have even known such stuff existed. Most of you would not have even thought such meanings could exist for mundane stories. This revelation is not a small thing if you contemplate. If this is not an anugraham, what is? If this is not a siddhi, what is? In fact, understanding and contemplating of Vedanta and playing in the field of Advaita is in itself a miracle. What other miracle do you want? So shed all your doubts and your anxieties of progress and simply trust that the guru is the gurus of this great compassionate Guru Mandalam is not even holding your hands and walking with you. In fact, they are carrying you guys on their shoulders and taking you home. If that is not obvious from the happenings of the events, what else could? Even the Mahayaga event, right from the place of the event until the Abhishekam, didn't we feel someone else taking charge and running the whole show? And you were just simple followers. How many miracles unfolded right in front of you during that event? In fact, you were all playing the roles of a magician yourself during the event. Every day you chant your Guru Padaka. Every day you chant your mantra. Every day you do your anushtanas. You're hitting the stone with a chisel. The Devata is right before you in the stone. Every time you hit the chisel, you're working on removing the unwanted jnana chips so that the Atman can reveal itself. Progress is made every single day. The work has started. The effort is known. Guidance is constantly there. Motivation to see the Devata is high. You simply cannot afford to lose focus and give up. It is standing tall right in front of you, in you. Okay? Every week when I share the audios of the lectures to Gigi, she would always say that, Kekrava ellam romba kuduthu vechiruka, உருமண்டல அனுகிரகம் பரிபூர்ணமா இருக்கு, இல்லாட்டி இந்த ரகசியங்கள்லாம் இவ்வளோ கம்மியான டைம்ல அவளுக்கு கிடைக்கிறது அப்படிங்கிறது துர்லபம். அவ பண்ண புண்ணியம் அவங்களுக்கு இவ்வளோ ஈஸியா கிடைக்கிறது. This is a constant statement from her every single week. So when someone gets something without much effort, what do we call that? Adishtam is knocking the door, right? What is true adishtam for us now? Drishtam means that we can, that can be seen. Hold on a second. Drishtam means that can be seen. Adishtam means that is not visible. So what is not visible to us now? Our own Atman. So really, it's adrishtam is knocking the door. Your own Atman is knocking from within. Okay, so last week I talked about the Hiranyagarbha, how we created this large golden egg. And Rudra used his Shakti, that Spandana of Vimarsha Shakti, to crack open from inside and reveal itself. That is how within this Pindanda called Jiva, the Atman within has started to do this Spandana due to the Vimarsha Shakti called Guru Mandala Kripa and is ready to crack open to reveal itself. Okay, so with that, I hope all your doubts should be clear. Let me now address the other question of moksha possibility because of guna. I told you last week that only because of guna, we have the possibility of moksha. That potential exists because of the gunas only. We all know how we come across, come with the basic composition depending on our gunas at the end of the last janma and the gunas of our parents at the time of conception. This establishes our base. But we know that we are not how we were at birth and we have evolved a lot. Several factors, teachers, parents, environment, friends, scriptures, etc., etc., carve us constantly and we belong to the society of influencers, us included. Just like how others influence us, we influence others too. Some of these influencers have the potential to change our basic composition itself. I'm careful not to use good way or bad way because there is none as such. Whatever and whoever and however you are is the truth. And that is what you have to work with. Is it good or bad depends on some reference point set up by some other influencer. So it's wise to ignore that. We know that increasing the sattva and decreasing the tamas and rajas will help in our path to moksha. How to do that? Yoga Sastra and Vedanta has charted out several detailed techniques. I like one grantha that addresses both these together. It is called Sutta Samhita. It gives methods on how to increase the sattvagunas and to decrease the rajas and tamogunas. These are not new methods. We would have all heard about it. In the Ashtanga Yoga, the first two steps are Yama Niyama. There are 10 Yamas and 10 Niyamas. What does Yama mean? Restraint. What does Niyama mean? Vow or agreement, a promise, commitment. That's Niyama. So the beauty of Sutta Samhita is it would give the yogic meaning of the Yamas and Niyamas, basically a literal meaning, and also a Vedantic meaning to it. Okay, so that is the beauty of Sutta Samhita. And I have given all these things in Purana Dilagari, third year, P3, I think, P3, D2, blah, blah. It started from that time. And I did not take all the chapters, because Sutta Samhita is a big text. And I've taken only those chapters that are relevant to us from our sadhana perspective. I think I completed all the Jnanakandas and then all the chapters within the Jnanakanda and then some other khandas too. So if you go through that in the 12 issues, you would see several of those Sutta Samhita text addressed there. But I'm going to focus into Yama and Niyama. Today, I'll go through those 10 Niyamas. The next session, I'll go through the 10 Niyamas. And I'll address the yogic way and the Vedantic way. We'll talk about both. So what are the Yamas? Yamas, Sutta Samhita states, Ahimsa, Satyam, Asteyam, Brahmacharyam, Daya, Arjavam, Kshama, Dhriti, Mitaharaha, Saucham Chayiti, Yama, Dasha. Very simple slokam. So 10, they give a list. Ahimsa, non-violence. Satyam, speaking the truth. Asteyam, not stealing. Brahmacharyam, being a celibate. Daya, compassion. Arjavam, this means honesty, sincere, humble. Several flavors to it. Kshama is forgiving. And then Dhriti is vairagyam or courage. Mitaharam is limited sattvic food. Saucham is clean. Okay, see, these are the 10 yamas. So those are the literal meanings from Yoga Sastra perspective. Those little meanings are applicable just for the yoga from a normal day-to-day life perspective. Let's look into the Vedantic meaning of these also. By the way, whatever Vedantic meaning I'm giving or sharing is not my own invention. These are discussed by Sutta Maharishi himself to others in Naimicharanya. So let's look into the first yama, which is Ahimsa. So he says, Vedoktena prakarena vina satyam tabodana kayena manasa vacha himsa himsa na chanyata. So Yoga Sastras claim that killing or hurting anything through the mind or body, other than that, is allowed by Vedas. So Vedas do allow some himsa. So anything that is not allowed by the Vedas, any killing or hurting, either through the mind or through your body, is called a himsa. So not doing a himsa is ahimsa. So we don't like the literal meaning, isn't it? Because we are now in a graduate school and still talking about A plus B whole square. It does not interest us. So Sutta Maharishi himself has understood your state and wrote these just for you because he knew that you will be ready and ask these questions. So what does he say about ahimsa? Atma sarvagato chedya adahya iti yamatihi. Sacha ahimsa paraprokta mune vedanta vedibhi. Very interesting what he says. Atma is sarvagataha. Atma sarvagataha. So he moves everywhere, meaning he is everywhere. Then he says achedya. Achedya means he cannot be split. Adahya meaning he cannot be burnt. If this understand is kept, iti yamatihi, if this understand is kept in your buddhi, then you are said to be practicing ahimsa. That's what Sutta Maharishi says. So what? How is this related to ahimsa? It does not make any sense, right? You have to look deep into this. He first establishes the fact that Atman is everywhere. That is clear. Then he talks about splitting and burning. Why? That is how we typically try to kill something. Why would we kill an Atman? Is he talking about suicide? Is he saying if we don't do suicide, then we are all ahimsavadis? No, he does not mean that. Theoretically, it is easy to say that Atman has no end and it is always there. But when we face the death of someone near and dear, what happens? We start to cry and grieve as if they are gone. What is gone is just the body. If someone loses their shirt, will we cry? It is just the body that is gone and not the Atman. But what do? We attach the body to the Atman and kill the Atman too. We try to burn the Atman along with the body. We try to bury the Atman along with the body. There are practices in North India in those days, and it still exists in Tibet even now, where they cut the body and throw it to the birds after death. So we try to cut the Atman along with the body. Do you get the meaning now? So if you stop burning, burying, and cutting the Atman like the body, and can keep it separate and know that Atman is always present, it's a nitya vastu, vastu and everywhere, then what is there to grieve? Why would he cry for any loss of the body? This himsa that is performed on the Atman should be stopped. This can only be stopped in your buddhi, which is the matihi. If that is done, then you are supposed to be practicing ahimsa. This type of ahimsa is said to be the greatest of all. Para. Who says that? Those great jnanis who have understood the Vedas and those Vedantis. Now let me read the sloka again. You'll know how easy it is. Atma sarvagataha achedya adahya iti ya matihi sacha ahimsa paraprokta mune vedante vedibhi. Very simple. Very easy to understand, right? Now you all know how to practice ahimsa. So you have to always constantly separate the body from the Atman. Good. Let's look into the next yama, which is Satyam. Yadvat dushtendriyair drishtam srutam veda vidamam vara tasyair voktibhir bhaved vipra satyata nanyata bhaved. So what this says is those who simply state what is heard and seen through their proper senses, the indriyas, that is functioning without any prejudice, then they are supposed to be practicing satyam. Look at the way he has described the prejudice to the indriyas. We all know that we would only want to see what we like to see. We would hear what we like to hear. Such indriyas have doshas of prejudice. how can an instrument which is defective and questionable with questionable credibility provide a credible outcome? So how can that be a satyam? A prejudiced person can never speak truth. That's what he's basically saying. Okay, so so he says dushte indriyam drishtam shrutam. So by using that prejudiced indriyam, if you are hearing or seeing, then it is not a satyam. So adushtam indriyam, so that which does not have the prejudice, if you're seeing or hearing through that, and then if you're as if whatever you heard and saw through those kind of instruments, if you just split it out as is, then you are speaking truth. Okay, now let's look into the Vedanta perspective of satyam. Sarvam satyam param brahma na chanyetidi yamatihi tat satyam paramam proktam vedanta jnana bhavitaihi. Again, same, he is using the similar context. The only truth is Parabrahman and everything else is illusionary. Anything illusionary cannot be truth. So if this is firmly established in your brain, then you practice satyam, because that is the only thing you think about and discard the illusions. This type of practicing satyam is supposed to be the greatest of all, says those Vedanta Jnani. Next, Yama, not stealing. Anyadiye trine ratne kanchane mautike piva manasapi nivruttirya tasyasteyam vidur budaha. So this is the literal meaning. So if a person does not involve in stealing others' grass, or meaning herbs, gems, gold, pearls, etc., even through his mind, then he's supposed to be not stealing. Okay, this is a very straight literal meaning. Let's look into the Vedanta meaning. Atmane anatma bhavena hyapara vivarjanam yattastatteyamityaktam atma vidbhir mahatmabihi. Even an identity theft is considered stealing, isn't it? In addition to that, if you portray a different identity, it's a greater sin. So stealing away the identity of Atman and Nitya Vastu, and top of it superimposing the identity of an anathman, a completely opposite identity to it, is stealing and a sin. Refraining from doing this is called asteyam, not stealing. Look at the beauty of this tattva vicharam. Ahimsa, satyam, asteyam, all of these constantly drive the point that Atman is constant. It is a nitya vastu. There is no start or end to it. There is no point in imposing death to it. Ahimsa said, don't worry about death. Basically removing the fear. Then it says, deeply establish in your brain that this is the only truth. So Shraddha blossoms. Now it says, stop superimposing your illusionary ideas on top of it. Don't steal its identity. It is all the same, but hitting you using different chisels. So now let's look into the next yama, Brahmacharyam. Kayena manasa vacha narinam parivarjanam ritu sevam vina swasyam brahmacharyam tadochyate. So through body, thoughts and words, staying away from sexual thoughts, unless it is performed for reproduction purposes, as prescribed by the Shastras, is called Brahmacharyam. This is straightforward. Let us look into the Vedanta perspective. Brahma bhave manascharam, Brahmacharyam param tata, atmavat sarvabhuteshu kayena manasagira. Here, Sutta Maharishi splits the word into two, Brahman plus Charyaha, one who constantly wanders in the thoughts of Brahman. Basically, sadavidya and samhatihi is nothing but brahmacharya. This is nitya, nitya vastu vivekam and vairagyam, both included. Why am I saying this? What does it mean to by constant contemplation? What do you constantly contemplate upon? It is the first place to perform this constant contemplation. You need vairagyam. That contemplation is the contemplation itself is the vivekam. Right? So, next yama is the daya. So atmavat sarvabhuteshu kayena manasagira anukampya daya. If you see every living being as yourself, both from body and mind, and show sympathy to them, then it is daya. The Vedantic perspective is very similar, says Sutta Samhita Maharishi, showing compassion to all living beings, be it plants or animals or other human beings, whether they when they suffer, if you also suffer. Yeah? So வாடிய பயிரை கண்ட போதெல்லாம் வாடினேன் said Valla, right? That is daya. Now because he saw plants suffer, not because he saw plants suffer, he was able to relate with that chaitanyam and experience this same suffering within. That was the Vedantic perspective. Now for the remaining yamas, Sutta Maharshi did not provide the Vedantic perspectives that clearly. He simply gives the literal meanings for the remaining yamas, most of the yamas, and is silent from the Vedantic perspective. Why does that mean that there are no Vedantic perspective? No, that is not how you are supposed to take it. Remember, he is a Maharshi. His audience then were other rishis too. So it was enough for him to give a hint on how to contemplate and understand the Vedantic perspectives and then move on. But we are not Maharishis and we need a lot of spoon feeding. We need gurus to give us easy to swallow fruits like bananas. Even then, we need the guru to peel the skin of the banana, cut it into swallowable pieces, mix it with honey, and then sing a song showing the moon and then feed it in the mouth. Even then, we would keep it in the jaw itself. Guru still has to find tricks to make you put the effort to swallow it. We need a lot of recognition, appreciation for swallowing that honey-soaked banana piece. That is the kind of generation we are living. So these Sutta Maharishi hints won't work. We need more obvious, explicit explanations. So even though he didn't give the Vedantic perspectives, I will attempt to fill the gap. So we'll start with the next yama. The next one is Arjavam, which is honesty or sincerity or humbleness. So let's look into that. Putre, mitre, kalatre cha, ripo swatmani santatam, aikya rupyam mune sayatate, arjavam prochete maya. So the literal meaning is, if you're able to see your son, friend, wife, and enemy as the same as you, then you're practicing arjavam. It's a little tricky. In the previous yama, he said, compassionate to all living beings. Here he separates out the human stakeholders around you and asks you to be the same to everyone. This is where our pratiksha puja comes handy. In no other path we have this practice. Only in Shakta Margam we have this pratiksha puja technique, which forces people to see Brahma Chaitanyam within others. Granted, we do the avahanam of Devata into the other person, and while we believe that Devata has entered within the other person, we are able to treat the other person like God and surrender. However, the real idea is that whether you do the avahanam or not, if you start to see the Brahma Vastu, the same Vastu that is in you, shining within the other person, who would you consider as your friend or an enemy or a son? All the relations are just to cover. They are related to the body only. The sajatiya bedam, vijatiya bedam, swagata bedams are all to the body only, isn't it? What? You feel that you have heard these terms somewhere? I'm sure you would look for the past lectures to understand these terms again. These are the three types of differentiation. I have talked about this before. Sajatiya bedam, vijatiya bedam, and swagata bedam. The Brahma Vastu does not have any of these differentiations. If you understand Sanskrit, the name themselves gives out the clues and self-explanatory. What are these? Vijatiya bedam means difference between two different species. My pet dog and I are living beings, but dog and I are different. Sajatiya bedam means difference between the same species. You and I are both humans. We are the same as the species, but you are different and I am different. Swagata bedam means difference within oneself. Now I am only one, no difference, but I have other parts. I have my mind, my hand, my foot, etc. So I can identify parts within myself which are different from one another. So these kind of differentiations are not possible for the Brahma Vastu. There is nothing other than Brahman. Hence, you cannot compare Brahman with another to establish a Vijatiya bedam. There aren't multiple Brahmans to compare within the Brahman species. There is no Brahman species. There exists just one Brahman. So there is no Sajatiya bedam. Fine, what about the Swagata bedam? Are there any parts to Brahman, like the proton, electron, and neutron within an atom? What about the Vimarsham and Prakasham and Gunas, etc. we talked about? They are all the same dot only. They are not different from the Brahma Vastu. It cannot be separately identified like a hand or a head of a person. Just like you cannot separate the heat from the heated iron rod, Brahma Vastu cannot be further separated. So coming back to our Pratyaksha Puja concept, the differentiation happens and the whole Aham, Tvam, Asti, Nasti, etc. happens only because of this body, this Kanjukam called body. If you keep on contemplating on the Nitya-Nitya Vastu, you would know that all these things are operating because of the invisible power that is shining within. We may have 100 types of bulbs in the house with different capacities and shapes and usages. Yes, you can compare them at the external features, but internally, the same electricity is what is giving them the power. Is there any difference at the electricity level? No. But unfortunately, we don't see the electricity when we see the bulb. We only see the bulb color, shape, brightness, and constantly differentiate. All this differentiation will go away when you start to see the Brahma Chaitanyam within everyone. Not just everyone, everything. If that starts to blossom, where is the scope of mother, son, friend, enemy, etc.? Won't you end up treating everyone the same? You may renounce everyone or love everyone. You can choose whatever method you want to, but the differentiation will go away. So Arjavam, treating the same, is key. Let's look into the next yama, is it Kshama, meaning forgiving. Kayena manasa vacha shatrubhi paripidite vittaha kshoba nivrittarya kshamasa munipungava. The straightforward meaning is, even if you're tortured by your enemies by words or mentally and physically, remaining unhurt is kshama. This is again a continuation from the previous yama. This is why Sutta Maharishi included the enemy in the list for Arjavam. In fact, most of the time we get hurt by whom? By those who we love only, right? We expect enemies to hurt us. But those who love us, they're not supposed to hurt us. So if they hurt, they take us by surprise and the pain appears to be multifold more than what it ought to be. So seeing the son, friend, wife and enemy the same would clear this problem right there. So if they start to hurt, does it mean a thing to the Chaitanyam? If you have read the Deepali Tattvam, there would be a question on why did Krishna not kill Narakasura? Why did the Purana say that Satyabhama had to kill Narakasura? There may be stories about him getting a boon that only his mother can kill, etc. But the real Vedantic reason is at the state of Krishna as Aparoksha Guru, Narakasura does not even exist. So Satyabhama as the Paroksha Guru gets rid of the Ajnana. I can hear the mind voice now. What is this? You're throwing more Vedantic terms today. Well, all these terms are not new to you. I have covered all these earlier and have explained them. Advaita Vasana is not easy to grasp, I know. And you will forget all these things if you don't constantly contemplate of those. What is Paroksha and Aparoksha? You have the thirst to know the truth. You're fed up with the mundane day-to-day samsara cycle. You seek a guru. This guru teaches you what is life. Makes you understand that you really are not your body, not your mind or the intellect. You are the Atman. This Atman that is within you is also within me. So you and I are one and the same. Oh, by the way, the dog that you saw on the way, it is also having the same Atman within, which is no different from you and I. You first start to feel that the guy is crazy. You start to say, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you go back home. You're happy with the mantras he gave and start chanting them. Due to the power of the mantras, grace of the gurus, you start to realize that maybe he is right. Maybe all these are just illusion. Maybe Brahman is the only thing and everything that we see, eat, breathe, touch, hear are all Brahman only. This understanding of the Brahman intellectually is called Paroksha Jnanam. This is what you all have. I would rather say most of you have Paroksha Jnanam. Unfortunately, Paroksha Jnani is as good as a person who has a PhD in swimming and swimming techniques, but has never gone near the water. Okay, what is the point? Yes, you can talk all you want about Brahman. You can define Brahma Vastu much better than a Maharishi themselves. If you hear some of the Bhagavata Upanyasams, you would wonder that they themselves were witnessing Yashoda tying Damodara to the martyr, Ural. That is needed for the Upanyasakaras so that they can keep the audience captive. But does that take them even an inch closer to that Brahma Vastu that they are talking about? Nope. Unless you experience the Paroksha Jnanam, you would remain a doctor swimmer who would not have touched water in his life. Is that bad? Not at all. You have the qualifications and are prepared to be a good swimmer. All you need is to find deep enough water and jump in it. Not knowing where the water is one hurdle. Fear may keep you away from the water is another hurdle. Forgetting the techniques once you are into the water is another hurdle. But having a coach next to you, giving you the noodle to hold, while you practice and until you get to the stage where you can swim by yourself is a gift. That gift is a guru. For that, you need a guru who is a swimmer too. What is the point in getting a guru who is also a doctor swimmer? He can only create another doctor swimmer. He cannot make you a swimmer because he himself cannot jump into the water and give you the noodle. So only those who experience the Brahma Vastu will know that there is none other than the Brahma Vastu. That is the experiential truth, Aparoksha Jnanam. In such a state, who is your enemy? Who is your son? Who is your friend? Who is your spouse? Who is the food? Who is eating it? Who is enjoying it? Aham bhojanam naiva bhojyam na bhokta chidananda rupa shivoham shivoham. So being in the shivoham state is shama. Let's look at the next yama, dhruti. Veda veda vinirmokchaha samsarasya na chanyata iti vijnana nishpathir dhruti proktahi vedikaihi. Only through understanding of the Vedic knowledge and clearly rejecting the worldly activities does one attain moksha. A dhruta bhukti, being adamant about this fact, is called dhruti or courage or vairagyam. The Vedantic explanation to this is vairagyam. Ahamatma namartyosi ityeva aprayuchyuta matihi yasa prokta dhrutisreshta mune vedante vedibhi. So, having a clear vairagyam in your path, your guru, your upasya devata, key for progress. How can you develop this vairagyam? You need to have the dhruti that you are the Atman. Aham Atma, na martya. There's no death for me. The Brahma Vastu only. I am the Atman, the Brahma Vastu, and there is no death to the Atman. And you are everlasting. An undeterrent belief, this vairagyam on this fact, is dhruti from Vedanta perspective. Let's look into the next yama, which is mitaharam. Alpam mishtasanabhyam tu nasti yoga katamchana tasmad yoganugunyena bhojanam mita bhojanam. This is an interesting topic. Sutta Maharshi says it is not about how much you eat, less or more, doesn't matter. It is what you eat that matters. Remember, by eating less or eating more, you are not going to attain yoga siddhis. But what and how you eat will aid you in your practice. That's what he says. Alpam mishtasanabhyam tu nasti yoga kadachana. You eat small or you eat less or you eat more, doesn't matter. It is not going to help you at all. But what you eat. So say, take sattvic food that results in positive pranic energy. This is a big dietitian topic on its own. So we'll not contemplate on that right now. We'll now contemplate on the Vedantic perspective. While the literal food does have an impact on your sadhanas and even the willingness to do the sadhana, more important are the foods for your thoughts. Garbage in is garbage out, and is absolutely true in this case. While you can clean your bowels if you have food poisoning, how do you clean the garbage that has made karmic imprints already? It's not easy as swallowing a stool softener, isn't it? So mitaharam refers to feeding your thoughts. Who feeds the thoughts? Your mind, obviously. Who feeds the mind? Your indriyas. So who controls your indriyas? It is supposed to be your mind, but it is most cases the other way around. So look at good things, listen to good things, speak only good things, eat only sattvic food. That is the catalyst. Okay. Strictly following Sri Vidya path will enforce you to live such a life. From the moment you wake up till you sleep at night, you will constantly be doing some japa, clearing doubt with your gurus, doing pujas, pranaya, parayanas, contemplation, etc. Where would you even have time to engage in too much of worldly activities? So mitahara is choose the type of thoughts that you dump in your mind. The more sattvic in nature, you trigger more sattvagunas. This means your indriyas are also trained to only see, hear, speak, and be with only things that are conducive to your path. Satsang is very, very important here. Okay, so we look into the last yama, which is saucham. Swadeham alanirmoksho mrujjalabhyam. Swadeham alanirmoksho mrujjalabhyam mahamune. Yattak chauchyam bhaved bahya manasam mananam viduhu aham suddham iti jnanam saucham vanchati panditaha. The literal meaning is keeping the external bodies clean using the saucha kriyas. But what is more important is the internal cleansing, keeping the thoughts clean. You should be, I am clean within. Then automatically the external becomes clean. Even if you clean the external body 1,000 times, if you're accumulated dirt within, you'll only exhibit durgandham. So I have seen numerous monks and sadhus that come to Kumbh Melas. Even take the example of some known rishis in Thirunamalai. They were known to be living on the streets in smashan, in dirts. But those who go near them would never feel disgusted. They would only experience sugandham. I have experienced this when I went to Parvatamalai, where a sandalwood smell was prevalent near a Siddha Purusha, regardless of how he appeared externally. Okay, so atyantam malano dehe dehi chanyanta nirmalaha ubayor antaram nyatva kasi saucham vidiyate. The dirt is only for the external. The Atman is always pure. Those who can separate the body from the Atman and relate himself with the Atman, where is Saucham for such a pure person? Okay. Jnana Saucham Parityajya Bahyo Yo Ramate Naraha Sa Mudha Kanchanam Tyaktva Loshtam Grinnati Suvrata. The fool who discards keeping the internal clean and focuses on just the external cleanliness is like discarding the gold and focusing on clay. Loshtam means wood that you put on the roof. So that is clay, basically. Okay. Jnanam basaiva sudhyasya kritakrityasya yoginaha kartavyam nasi lokesmin nasti chaitra chainana satatvavite. That yogi who cleanses himself with the water called jnana, there is nothing in this world for him to perform. Lokatrayepi kartavyam kinchan na satyam avedanam ihaiva jivan muktasya ihachet idi hi shrutihi. For those who have experienced the Atman, there is nothing that is worthy of their doing in the entire universe. As per the Veda Vakyam, ihachet, they remain as jivan mukta. So what is this ihachet Veda Vakyam? This comes in Kathopanishad, 6th chapter, 4th shloka. Ihachet asakat bodhum bodhum asakat bodhum prak sarirasya visrasaha tatas sargeshu lokeshu sariratvaya kalpate. So that is the slokam, Kathopanishad slokam, which is referred in Sutta Samhita in this Jnana Kandam. Iha means here while having this body, chet, if. Asakat means is able to or becomes capable of bodhum, to understand, prak, before, sarirasya visrasaha, before the body disintegrates. Tataha, then, sargeshu lokeshu, in the whole universe, sariratva kalpate, he takes the prakasha body, he shines. Basically, while in this body, if he is able to experience the Brahman before the body disintegrates, then that person shines in this whole universe as a jivan mukta. That's what Kathopanishad says. That's what he is mentioning here also. Sutta Maharishi refers to. Tasmat sarva prayatnena muni ahimsadi sadhanehi atman aksharam brahma vidhi jnanattu vedajad. Hence, hey rishis, take up these ahimsadi sadhanas as per the Vedanta perspective and realize that this Atman is none other than Brahman. This is how Sutta Samhita ends the Yama Nirupanam chapter of the Jnana Kandam. This Vedanta perspective of Yama Nirupanam is supposed to increase the Sattva Gunas. You may question, what is this, Guruji? You have everything, including the Aparoksha Jnana, which leads to Nirvikalpa Samadhi itself in this 10 Yama itself. These are basically our destination. How can these become qualifiers? That's a valid question. Remember, he has given both literal and Vedantic meanings. Literal meaning is a qualifier and the Vedantic meaning is a destination. One would lead to the other. As I always said, remember, this is the purpose of your birth. Nothing else is more important than this. There is no reason to stress about it other than the fact that you realize that you need to reach the destination in this birth itself. You cannot consider this as your next project and say, okay, I finished 1,000 counts of this mantra for 100 days. What next? It doesn't work that way. Even the japas you do, it is not just a counter. The quality of your japas plays a huge role. If you start stressing out of your daily spiritual activities, then you are missing the whole point. You'd only be thinking about your next activity and completing the next activity, but you would never be experiencing any activity. Remember, the jnana can happen today too. If you give yourself to your sadhana, it can happen today. If you rush through it, you run into the risk of missing it altogether. It is not how much you do, but how you do that matters. Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Deva Maheshwara, Guru Sakshat Parabrahma, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Namaskaram Guruji.
Namaskaram Guruji.
Namaskaram Guruji.
Namaskaram Guru.